Hello, and welcome to Sounding Out with Izzy, the podcast where we have conversations with musicians, music producers, publicists, live promoters, zine makers, journalists, and more about their experiences working in the music industry as women, non-binary, and queer people. I'm your host, Isabel Korp, the founder of the queer femme music-based blog and YouTube channel, A Girl's Two Sound Sense. For today's episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Irish singer-songwriter Kate Dineen. Kate and I delve into the story of how the strange algorithmic bubbles of the internet, coupled with the end of a romantic relationship, inspired her latest song, Doom Scrolling. And additionally, we discuss the profound freedom and growth Kate experienced workshopping her songs with her singer-songwriter peers, and her favorite strategies for overcoming creative droughts as an artist. And without further ado, let's get right into this episode. So, I understand that you were raised in Kerry, Ireland, and that seems like a very lush and scenic environment with endless driving routes, mountains, a lot of water. What was it like being surrounded in that type of environment as a kid?
I think it's funny because, like, now when I go there, I'm like, oh my God, this is, you know, the most beautiful place in the world. But I think when you're growing up somewhere, it's so normal to you that you don't realize that you're surrounded by this, you know, beautiful scenery and, you know, nature and everything. Like, you know, from the house that I grew up in, you can see like mountains and sea, and, you know, it's absolutely stunning, especially on like a nice day. But when you're growing up, that's so normal. You don't appreciate it in the same way, I think. But for me, I think, like, growing up, obviously, especially when you're a teenager, you're like grumpy and you want like to live in a big dirty city. And now that I live in a big dirty city, I just want to live in the countryside. But yeah, no, it was really nice. And especially for me, like, living near the beach, I absolutely love the sea and I love swimming and I love just being around the sea. Like, whenever I go home, I'll always try and go for at least one like walk along the coast or something, because I just love that. I feel like it just like clears out your head and it's so fresh and it's just so lovely.
For sure. I feel like it's almost customary to grow up wanting something more than your hometown. And then once you've left it, you realize how good you had it, almost, in a way.
Yeah.
I also read something that I thought was really cool, that you would always read all your dad's CD inserts in the car when you were a kid. Have you considered, if any of those CDs are still around, like pressing them all like into a binder or something like that? That would be really cool.
Yeah, that's a nice idea. I'm sure there are. They're probably at my dad's house or somewhere in a box. But yeah, I suppose I always just like loved lyrics, you know, and I've always loved reading. So I kind of like, even as a kid, I would just read anything. So I think, you know, music and reading and the combination of the two, you know, always really appealed to me. And especially like when it's kind of like a lost art now, but I feel like, but, you know, CDs and the little booklet that would come with it. I mean, there was like imagery, there was words, there was, you know, all the credits of like who wrote the song, who recorded the different parts, you know, and like, so much information that you could get from that. And I loved like learning all these little things, maybe like, oh, this band member wrote this song, you know, as opposed to the other one wrote this other song. And like, just that kind of collection of, I suppose, information, and then learning the lyrics, because sometimes, you know, when you hear a song, you don't know what they're actually saying. So I always enjoy that too. But no, I never have thought about putting them all into one book. Would I look at it? Probably not. But it's a nice idea.
Right. I think it's like the nerd in me that thinks like this would be a fun archival project in a way.
Yeah. It will be kind of like a trip down memory lane, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes as well, like with bands or with like albums like that, like when you used to have the physical product on the shelf, like you might have less music, but you would be reminded often of things that you hadn't listened to in a while. Whereas now I feel like in the kind of Spotify streaming era of like, you have access to everything, but because you select certain things, then it keeps pushing you towards a certain sound and you forget about that kind of like alternative or that different thing that you used to have on your shelf, you know, that you might just pick up every now and again and listen to. It's not like as front of mind or something. So I do kind of miss that, the randomness of like a CD collection, that it doesn't always make like, it's not very uniform sometimes.
Yeah, right. That's an interesting point about algorithms sort of isolating your experience and what it pushes you to listen to more. I feel like that is a weird experience that I have had firsthand, and I'm sure a lot of other people have experienced firsthand, is that you have access to so much at your fingertips. And it's right in your pocket. You can just log on, like on your phone or on your laptop, and you have so much stuff right in front of your eyes. But my experience hasn't exactly been to branch out and listen to absolutely everything that I now have access to. I found it's more that I just keep listening to the same stuff over and over again.
Exactly. And I don't know if you've noticed, like, that this week there's kind of this news playlist. I think it's AI generated. It's called like the day list or something.
Yeah.
And it keeps like updating depending on the time of day, like what kind of mood you might be in. And then, like, and it's kind of like that. It's like, well, I don't hate any of these songs, so I'll keep listening to it. But it's not like I'm rediscovering anything like mind blowing, you know, in the way that you might have listening to the radio. Like, you might have, there might be a song that you hate and a song that you love and a song that you don't really mind. But it's kind of like, oh, I kind of, yeah, I'm pretty much like all of these, which I don't know if that's helpful or not, you know?
Right, yeah, it's interesting.
Mm.
Growing up, what would you say pushed you to start writing your own material?
Yeah, so I suppose I always enjoyed writing. And when I was younger, I used to write like little poems and stuff. I loved poetry and I loved poetry books and kind of trying out things and making things rhyme and stuff, but it wasn't really like a serious pursuit. And then when I started playing music, particularly guitar, you know, I really enjoyed that, and I found it quite freeing, I suppose, because before that I'd learned like classical piano, which is quite rigid and quite, you know, you learn off a piece, you know, and you perfect it and you make it sound exactly how it's supposed to sound, like as the composer wrote it. But then with guitar, I found, oh, okay, you know, you can learn a song and then you can kind of change it and make it your own to an extent. And then what happened to me was there was a competition on national radio here in Ireland, and it was to cover Teenage Kicks by the Undertones, which is like a punk rock song. And I decided to kind of give it a go. So I made like an acoustic folky version of that song and I sent it in, and it came second in that competition. And this was when I was a teenager, so it was kind of shocking that like it got picked, and then also people were like voting for it. And that kind of made me go like, oh, people, you know, like what I do or like to listen to me, kind of. It kind of gave that like spark. And that's, I mean, not that w like one shouldn't probably search for external validation, so I kind of feel almost like bad saying this, but I suppose knowing that people enjoyed to an extent what I did and the music that I made kind of pushed me to try and write my own songs. And that's really how the journey started for me.
Yeah. And when you write throughout the years, how do you feel your habits have evolved since you first began?
I think, you know what, in some ways they haven't, in that like I'm still a very sporadic songwriter. Like I'll go through kind of like, you know, a phase where I have like a glut of material, and then I'll go through an absolute drought. And I'm not great at being kind of regimented in like sitting down and writing a song, you know, a day or a week or anything like that. It's very much like as they come to me almost. But in saying that, like I think my style has evolved a little bit over time, and I think like the things that worked for me even back then, you know, I still do kind of draw on a lot from like personal experience and my kind of interpretation of the world. But yeah, I suppose like drawing in other influences, which is nice as well. I'm actually currently doing like a songwriting workshop with It's online, but it's with Adrian Lenker from Big Thief. And it's just been really nice. Like, I think doing things like that every now and again, it kind of just pushes you out of your comfort zone where you're learning from someone else and you're kind of like incorporating new techniques and you're meeting other people and sharing songs with them. So that's been a really cool experience as well.
Yeah, that does sound awesome. Do you want to tell me a little more about how you got into doing this course and how you feel like it's enhanced your skills?
Yeah, like it's so I just want an ad for it, to be honest, on the internet. And I signed up. I asked my family if they would get it for my birthday. And yeah, it's just been, it's actually, do you know what's funny is like the lectures, so it's like 4 week course and like this lecture each week with her. And then there's like a Q&A as well. And then you write a song. So they give you like homework and then you write a song and you share it with the, so you go into like a class group and you share it with two other people and they listen to it and they give you feedback on it and you listen to theirs and like give them feedback, which is actually nearly been my favorite part, you know, because just getting that kind of peer feedback and having someone that knows you, like doesn't know you at all, listen to a song cold and then just like give like automatic feedback on it is it's really terrifying. But it's also very kind of freeing almost as well, because like they don't know you, they have no skin in the game, they just like say what they think, and then you know, you learn something, I think, just from having to do something in a like a really short space of time. Like for me, writing a song in a week is very, very quick turnaround. So it just puts you in that kind of like state of discomfort, which I think like often good things come from. But also I think just even for me, like sometimes like I write alone, so you know, a lot of the time I'm writing a song and I'm like, I wonder, do other people do it this way? Or, you know, do other songwriters have like this secret that I don't know about that they're using and I'm like, you know, in the dark over here? And I think listening to someone just speak on songwriting, and it's not like there's rules, right? So it's like, you know, she's just telling us her experiences and different things she's learned over the years. And that it's kind of like comforting as well to be like, okay, like, you know, we're all the same. You know, even like this person who really inspires me and I look up to is doing essentially the same things that I do as well, you know, and even just knowing that's quite nice.
Yeah, I'm sure. When you do experience those droughts or dry spells, what have you found have been the best ways to push through when it comes to creating new material? Do you think it's best to sort of walk away and let it run its course and let the inspiration strike when it chooses to? Or do you find it beneficial to just bang out something and be like, you know what? I'm never gonna release this and it's never gonna see the light of day, but I just need to get this out of my system.
You know, I think both are like good strategies to employ. Like sometimes you do just have to write the really, really crap song, you know, and finish it and be like, okay, that's it's out of me now, it's gone. That terrible idea doesn't exist anymore. And yeah, I think definitely keep trying is something that I found, you know what I mean? And like sometimes you'll spend a week or 2 weeks like just playing the same, like not what or what you feel like isn't a great melody or isn't a great lyric, or you know, you keep bashing at it until you kind of either give up or you kind of finish something that you're not happy with, and that's the end of it. That being said, like sometimes as well, like it's just not the time for that song, I find. Like I have a song that I released last year called Millennial, and that song, like I'd written that probably about 5 years before I recorded it, because I had it and I had it in this kind of open tuning and it ended in this kind of really loud bashing the guitar style of almost like Mumford and Sons or something kind of ending. And like it had this lyric that I wasn't super proud of. And like I used to kind of play it live sometimes and you know, people were like, oh yeah, I kind of like that one. And then all of a sudden, like one day I was messing around with a different like chord structure and I just didn't have any lyrics and I was like, oh, what kind of melody could I do with this? And then that song came back to me and I ended up rewriting it and, you know, changing the ending. And, you know, it's one of my favorite songs now that I've written. So I suppose sometimes things just need time to breathe and to live in the back of your head as well. So there's probably no right or wrong answer with that, which is frustrating sometimes because I wish it was like, oh yeah, give it 3 weeks and if it's not working, that's the end of it, or you know, just record it. But yeah, I think, you know, songs are and creativity, it's not like a linear thing all the time, you know. So you kind of have to go with it, and you kind of have to see what happens. And sometimes, you know, that like verse that you hated might end up in a song years later, and suddenly fit, and you don't hate it anymore, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting how things can come back around in that way, where it's just like, oh my God, I hate this song. And then all of a sudden, like something new comes to you, and then you're like, wait, I love this song.
Yeah, and sometimes as well, I find that like with that song Millennial, it was about, well, it's part of it's about like looking at your friends and where they are in life and comparing where you are to them. And I think when I wrote it, I was a little bit younger, so I was looking at other people who were doing that. And when it came back to me, I was that age where like a lot of my friends are having kids and getting married, and I'm like, oh, should I be doing what they're doing, or am I okay here? Or, you know, that kind of uncertainty. And the song, even though I'd written it years beforehand, you know, it had a new meaning because I was kind of living through it a little bit more. And you know, it's kind of nice in that way that you can kind of grow with the song. And you know, I think that's always a good sign when it's still relevant a couple of years later, that it, you know, you kind of hit something sweet there that you can kind of move with it.
Yeah, for sure. So I also read that you in your hometown didn't have access to many local venues. So you would approach any space that would have you, like a coffee shop, and sort of like play on the corner or whatever. How would you say that type of determination and drive propels you in the current culture of being a musician right now?
Like sometimes I'm like, who was she? Who was that girl who was just so confident, you know? Because I had one song that I'd written, and then like, you know, it was funny because I was talking on my Instagram the other day. I was doing a Joni Mitchell cover, and I remember at that like first gig I did, where like I literally went to the local coffee shop and was like, can I play a gig here? And they were like, okay. Like, as in they were so shocked, they just didn't know what to do. So they just put me on a couch and let me play and like fed me brownies. And like, I remember I tried to play A Case of You and like completely messed it up and just like stopped playing it halfway through. And since then, I've just had this fear of playing a Joni Mitchell song because of that experience. But like, I don't know, I just had this like certainty and confidence that like, I don't know what it was that made me feel like I had this ability that people would just want to listen to me sing. But you know, and I like, I've definitely lost that at times throughout my career. But like, I think more recently, probably the example that I would have is like my social media. And you know, I push myself really hard to be kind of present on a lot of platforms. Like particularly TikTok is one that's been working really well for me. But like, it's working well because I work really hard at it, and I post a lot, and I'm there, and I'm in the comments, and I'm making content. And you know, I think when I look at that, I'm like, okay, well, that determination hasn't left me. It's just moved to the online space from the physical space. And I think even just like sticking at it, you know, like I know a lot of songwriters who just stop, you know, not that they stop writing, but they just stop trying to promote themselves because it's a difficult road and it's a lonely road a lot of the time. And I think just keeping going often is quite difficult.
Yeah, definitely. I work in digital marketing with a lot of musicians, and a lot of the stuff that you're saying like really rings true just because it's the nature of the internet. And a lot of times you're not gonna get a big viral moment. It just won't happen. You just like, but continuing to push yourself, and 'cause I think a lot of people are like really, really shy when it comes to self-promotion. And, but like it or not, like that's the game at the moment. And determination and just like, and consistency is like really what's gonna get you visibility in the long run.
And I think as well, like, there's kind of this obsession, like, I think it's an online thing of like numbers, right? And I'm sure you see that as well, where you know, people are comparing constantly, like, oh, well, they only have, you know, X amount of followers. Oh, they only have this amount of listens. Oh, they only have. Whereas actually, you know, the numbers are often not the are not actually an indicator of what's happening. Because for me, like, I don't have big numbers on any platform, but Like, especially on TikTok, I find I have a real community that come in every day and they, watch my videos. Or if I have a gig and I mention it in a post, the next day I'll get a couple of comments like, "Oh, how was your gig last night?" And that kind of like community building and, slow, gradual growth. Like, I don't think I'm the kind of musician that probably will ever have a viral moment. I've accepted that fact. But, I think that what I'm building there is a lot better than one viral video that, like, a million people see, but then will they see the next thing? And I think it's kind of like reframing. And it's difficult because, like, I find it difficult too. I find it difficult to see another singer-songwriter who has, tens of thousands of followers, and I'm like, how come they can do it and I can't? But you kind of have to stop comparing insofar as you can and just see what will happen, because like they say, like, comparison is the thief of joy. And if you're just constantly comparing, like, you'll always find someone who's bigger than you. But it's kind of like trying to appreciate what you do have, but also to keep going and keep putting yourself out there.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, like you're saying, the c community building and building like an organic. I actually, there's a really awesome like feminist queer community in the punk space here where I'm at in New York. It's mainly in Brooklyn. I don't live in Brooklyn, but like I'm adjacent to that and I witness all the great stuff happening. And it was recently like written about in a local magazine, and one of the things that a band member said was that an A&R firm, secretly Canadian, secretly group, spoke to them, and that the best advice they gave them was, do not focus on the numbers, focus on building an organic community and visibility where you are, and that's what's really gonna propel you. And that I feel like is something that is overlooked a lot in the game, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And when I think about, like, all the things I see a lot of the time, even this idea of, like, don't have as many followers, or don't be as following as many people as follow you, and this kind of thing. And it's like, if I have 500 followers and I follow 500 people, like, I really don't think anyone's gonna look at that. And also, like, especially on TikTok, I follow a lot of the people that follow me back, especially if they post, and I'll often like comment on their posts and chat to them. And again, it's like reinforcing, because for me especially, and I think the type of music that I play, and it's quite like relatable, and it's quite, people identify a lot with it, and I'm quite like myself. Like, as an artist, I'm kind of basically just me. I don't have like a cool persona that I can kind of lean on or use. So, for me, I'm like, this is me, here I am, and if people are kind of friendly towards me and then I'm friendly back, I find that that's much more also rewarding for me. Like, it's much more, it kind of puts the social back into social media, as opposed to me performing and wanting everyone to just like clap along, and cheer me on. It's like I'm chatting to them, they're chatting to me, and that for me is much more like wholesome and rewarding than just, I suppose, singing my song and hoping people like it. I don't know. Maybe it's not for everyone, but like, that's just kind of what I find works for me a lot of the time.
Yeah, definitely. So tell me a bit about Doom Scrolling. How did that song get, I guess, to the point where you felt like it was an apt song single to release?
Yeah, so it's kind of a funny one. So I wrote it. It was kind of inspired by Spotify Wrapped. So during the pandemic, like, I was living with my boyfriend here in Dublin, and we lived in the same house together. We worked from home together. We were like literally spent every hour of every day together watching TV, eating. We were doing DIY jobs, like everything. And our lives were so intertwined. And then at the end of 2020, when Spotify Wrapped came out, I was showing him mine, and then I was like, "Oh, can I see your Spotify Wrapped?" And like, his top five podcasts that he listened to, I'd never heard of. And I just found it really shocking that, like, he spent, hours of the week listening to something, and I had no idea about it, just because we occupied such a tiny space, like living in this little house together. And it just made me realize how, like, through our phones and through the internet, we can occupy like a completely different space that to someone that's like sitting right beside us. And even though we're doing the same things day on day, we're actually seeing also very different things. So it's a little bit about that, and then a little bit about like my own experiences online on like just like Twitter. And like on Twitter, I found that I was getting a lot of like really negative stuff and really negative news, and it just kind of sent me into this real downward spiral for a while where like I couldn't stop looking at it, but it was also making me really miserable. So it's kind of about the two of those things, and I suppose I kind of have like formed it into the context of a breakup song. It's really kind of reflecting on that, I suppose, the fact that in the kind of modern age, we occupy almost two worlds, the physical world that we live in, and then also the virtual world through our phones and through the internet.
Yeah, that's a very interesting way to spin it too, to like really tell like the dissolution of a relationship and narrate it through the lens of what you're seeing in the digital world that the other person isn't. So we're also currently living through, I would say, a pretty dark time when it comes to cultural workers, especially when it comes to music, like writers are getting laid off, there's union busting, and I also understand that since you graduated and moved to Dublin, you were sort of caught in the middle of a deep recession in Ireland. How do you find, I guess, a sort of solace in the midst of all this turmoil and I guess like the chain reaction of capitalism sort of affecting cultural workers?
Yeah, it's so tough, you know, because like in Ireland especially, and I think it's everywhere to be honest, there's a real cost of living crisis as well here. So there's like not enough homes, you know, it's really, really expensive to live in cities where normally I suppose like those kind of cultural things happen and cultural spaces are being eroded a lot as well. Like there's a lot of like hotels being built and like that, you know, spaces that existed, you know, are being demolished to make way for housing, which kind of sucks the soul out of the city, I think, a little bit. And like a lot of artists don't live here anymore, like in Dublin, which is just really tough, I think. And you know, kind of, I think things are get like after the pandemic, it was really difficult, it felt like, because things hadn't reopened yet and it felt like there was nothing happening. And you know, people weren't going out to shows and it was just all a bit like scary almost. I think now things are a little bit more normal. But yeah, in terms of like where things are going, and you know, there's so much talk about like AI and all these other kind of things that you're just, it just seems so uncertain right now. I think the whole world feels a bit uncertain, but in particular the cultural spaces. It is difficult, you know, and I mean like for myself, like I still work a normal like day job, you know, I work 4 days a week. It's very difficult to like envision a world where I don't have to do that to sustain myself in the place that I live, like without making a drastic change. And that's difficult because that's quite draining, you know, when you're doing essentially two jobs, you know, and one is like to make ends meet and the other is, you know, what you're passionate about and you put so much time and effort into. But, you know, I think for me, like the answer is still music, you know what I mean? Like that's the thing that I love to do. And you know, even if it's to go out and play like a 30-minute set somewhere, you know, it's always worth it for me. Like it's just always so rewarding, it's so nourishing, it's so great to go out and meet other people. You know, a lot of the time I find like that because I'm a songwriter and I do a lot of stuff solo. And I'm like quite introverted as well, so like it's difficult sometimes to kind of force yourself to go out and like leave the house. But it's always worth it, even if it's to like an open mic night or something, just to like sit down and listen to some music and chat to other musicians and play a song or two. I just always find that so rewarding. And I think like the crazy thing is like in Ireland and in Dublin at the minute, like the scene is just so strong. Like there's just so many amazing artists out there. So like I'm always inspired when I go out. It's always really good.
Well, Kate, thank you so much for hopping on and joining me. As a little palate cleanser, my last question is, What are three of your favorite 2023 songs?
Ooh. 2023. What absolutely went through a Boy Genius obsession last year. Like I literally listened to the record like every day. I would listen to it in full for like months on end. So I'm gonna pick one of their songs. I think I wanna pick $20 because I kinda like it's quite loud and it's kind of a little bit in your face, which I really like. What else was I listening to last year? Ooh. I'm gonna pick a C-Mat song because I'm a big C-Mat fan. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She's like an Irish musician who kind of does like a country pop style thing. But I'm gonna pick Stay for Something. It's a song from her latest album. And then I think for 2023, I might pick a Lancôme song. That's another really great Irish act. They kind of do like a trad fusion kind of sound, and I'll pick Go Dig My Grave. Oh, that's
Nice. Yeah.
three.
Of course, like I wanted to give you space to decide because it's never an easy question. It's just like, oh no, what was released last year again? Yeah. I had the same struggle when I was writing, like not even writing, because I didn't even want to say anything about it because it's just such a well-trod path where everyone's like, my 2023 Wrapped. Here are the best albums and best songs. And I'm just like, okay, let me see if I can remember what was released last year. And I picked 10 songs and made a playlist that I showcased on my website. That was it. I'm just like, what would I have to say about this? It's just like, oh, these are good songs. And Happy New Year, you know?
These are in my head a lot.
Well, thank you again for hopping on and chatting.
Cool. Thanks, Isabel. Chat to you later.
Thank you so much for listening to Sounding Out with Izzy, and thank you again to Kate Dineen for joining me. Remember to subscribe and sign up for the mailing list on my YouTube channel and written blog, both under the name A Girl's Two Sound Sense. Give the podcast a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening, and I will catch you in the next episode of Sounding Out with Izzy.